So if we enter fire, we will be affected by that. We won't be able to easily enter fire very happily. So someone who is not a devotee means they are on the material platform. And Krishna is completely transcendental. So in order for them, someone who's completely mundane, to come to the beginnings even of the transcendental platform, so something quite radical has to happen. So Krishna is transcendental. Whatever he does is transcendental. Even if he does something which appears to be material, it's not material. There's nothing material to do with Krishna. Now, there's also nothing material to do with Krishna's internal, or his personal energies. His personal energies, direct personal energies. This material energy, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, explains that it's not one of his direct personal energies. By that I mean a manifestation of his own character directly. Krishna says, Bhumirapo Nalo Bayu Kamano Viredacha Ahankara Itiyame Vina Prakritya Ashtada. Earth, water, fire, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. Krishna says, these are my Vina Prakritya, separated energies. Means he is not personally really connected with them. Separated energy. And we are under the influence of those energies, or that energy, the material energy. Therefore, where is Krishna? We are not seeing Krishna. Because it's separate in that sense. The personal energy means spiritual potency. And there are subdivisions of the spiritual potency. Like Samvit, Sandini, Kladini. These are the three main divisions of the spiritual potency. The pleasure potency, the potency of knowledge and existence, eternity. So now bhakti, devotional service. If a person is to get bhakti, now how are they going to get it? Because bhakti is one of those internal, personal potencies which are direct manifestations of the Lord's personal spiritual nature. And through it, we connect directly with the supreme spiritual personality of Godhead. But we are on the mundane platform, or at least the people in general are completely on the mundane platform. So on page 2, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura, he raises the question that if Krishna is completely transcendental, and if the process of bhakti is also completely transcendental, but we are not at all transcendental, we're actually separated by the material energy, then how will we come to the level even of number 1, Shraddha, which is, even though it's the beginning, but it is at least the beginning of the transcendental platform. Does this sound too complicated to all of you, or any of you? Are you following the basic idea here? Yeah, okay. So, like, for example, towards the top of page 2, he quotes one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is actually Canto 1, Chapter 2, Verse 6. Svaipam samparo dharano yato bhakti arpoksa jaya vaitaki apratina ta yayatma supersedati. So the basic idea there is that such devotional service, which is the greatest thing, greatest occupation. So devotional service, if it's actually to really be devotional service, it has to be unmotivated and uninterrupted. And the word for unmotivated is ahoitaki, which means unmotivated or causeless. Causeless. Cause means that if I want you to do something, I say, look, here's 10 rands, so you do it. So the 10 rands becomes the cause. If something is causeless, then you do it. But you can't say, well, he's doing it for this reason or that. But he's just apparently just doing it. Now, The idea here is that bhakti is not caused by anything material. But it's not done, it's not causeless in the sense that there's absolutely no cause, and you're just simply doing it like a robot for literally no reason, and you know, it's just like a complete mystery why you're doing it. There is a cause. There's certainly a cause, but it is not at all material, because the activity is completely spiritual. So the cause cannot be material. So then he goes into a discussion of what does this mean, causeless, materially causeless, but somehow something happens, which is the cause. Your devotional service starts to happen. So what is that thing which is considered causeless materially, but is actually a cause? And the fact that it's a cause is manifest in the fact that you're doing devotional service. So he considers a number of possibilities. And I hope you all got this. You all got this? We'll wipe it off. It'll probably take 5 minutes. Because this duster is so hopeless. But anyway. So he considers certain things which may be causes. We could consider these. Are they causes or not? So let's see. Where does he begin? He begins about halfway down the page. Some people take the word, in this case the word is Yadricha. He's quoted another verse. As you can see it there, Mad Bhaktim Chad Cha Yadrichaya Yadrichaya Yaivo Pachita. And there are other verses where a person's getting devotional service is described by the Sanskrit word Yadricha, which directly means good fortune. Good fortune or somehow or other, like that. Someone gets devotional service. So now, just after that, he says, some people take the word to mean good fortune. Meaning, material fortune, material luck. Some people, in other words, generated by karma, like, so you get devotional service, that's very good. Like you get some money, that's very good. How did you get that money? Because previously you did something good. So that's karma. Now you get the money. So now you have bhakti. So some people may think, well, just like I did something good, I helped some suffering person. So now later on I got some money. That's the karma. So maybe I did something good in the past like that. And now I've got bhakti. Now I've got devotional service, which is giving me access to the Supreme Lord, which otherwise I couldn't have. So that's very fortunate. So what is the cause? Well, maybe it's because I helped some suffering person, fed the hungry people, clothed the unclothed, housed the unhoused, or whatever. Something like that. Or, alternatively, let's see. Let's go down to the bottom of the same paragraph. The same paragraph. If you can, you might consider this good fortune to be not due to pious activity. In other words, it's simply fortune, luck. You were just walking along the street and suddenly, bang, it was right there. So there was no cause, it was simply luck as such. So you might think, number two, it could just be luck. In other words, material good fortune, but without any karma behind it. Truly causeless. And then, the next paragraph, you might also suggest that it might just be Krishna's mercy.
Krishna just decided he liked you. Out of all the 300,000 people in Phoenix, he just chose you to give bhakti to, because Krishna somehow just decided he was going to. And then a little, like a variation on it, you might take it to be Krishna's, he says, unqualified mercy. Basically the same idea. Mercy, unqualified mercy. Anyway, he's making a little distinction there. Then, let's see. Right down in the bottom paragraph, at the beginning of the bottom paragraph, you might consider it to be devotee's mercy. So here we have Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is suggesting five possible alternatives. So let us, they're all here on the pages, so let us just consider them. Now, who feels that there's something wrong with the idea that you might get the transcendental process of bhakti in your hands through having performed some material good activity? Who objects to that idea? You object. Why?
So the definition you've given us, that bhakti has no material cause, and it cannot actually.
Okay. That's the idea. Many people think, even many devotees think, have thought or think, that you can get devotional service through material piety. But actually it's not the case. Because, and this is going to be discussed in the next chapter, which we will also discuss today, he talks about the development of devotional service in terms of the growing of a creeper. And a creeper grows from a seed. So, if you perform some activity, if you perform an activity, that becomes the seed of the reaction. Right? You do good to someone, that becomes the seed for your getting in the future some beneficial thing through karma. So now, if bhakti is completely transcendental, then the seed for it, or the cause, has to also be transcendental. Just as if you have an apple seed and you plant it in the ground, you will get an apple tree. You will not get an orange tree. Because the seed does not contain whatever it takes to get an orange tree, because of its nature. So material good activity, if we look at it as being the seed for something which we will then gain as the result in the future, it doesn't, material pious activity doesn't include anything spiritual. So that thing which grows from the seed can't be spiritual. It can only be of the nature of the seed. You get the idea? Fairly simple idea. So actually the seed of bhakti has to be spiritual. That thing which causes it, from which bhakti is generated and becomes manifest, that now you have faith, now you're associating with devotees, now you have a taste for Krishna. The seed from which all that is coming has to be spiritual. It can't be just a matter of material karma, and it can't just be good luck. Because good luck means, in fact he says here, it's about halfway down. If one considers this good fortune is not due to pious activities, but just luck, in other words, then it becomes indescribable, it becomes intangible, it becomes meaningless. You can't, it's like nothing actually. Phantasmagoria. So then, spiritual. Now how about Krishna? Krishna's spiritual. So what about Krishna being the cause? How about that? Now, does anyone object to that idea? Any of the Matajis? You're all sitting there.
being very studious. Do any of you object? Do any of you think that a person might not get bhakti by Krishna's mercy, be it just Krishna's mercy or even his unqualified mercy? What do you think? Or do any of you think anything about it? Pro or con? Do any of you think that, yes, it may be true? Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, so you think that. Now what about you men? Do you also agree? They are saying, it seems there's a consensus to some extent, that a person may get bhakti by Krishna's mercy. Oh, my mind. That's an interesting idea. Well, yes. And in fact...
So if they say that by Krishna's mercy, then how is it that
Some
people get
back to
me and some don't.
Very good.
I reject
it. Oh, thank you. So all you other ladies, I hate to say it, but you all flop. Anyway, you're all very nice to ladies. Just learn the lesson and you'll make up for it. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Sama Aham. Sama means same. Sarvabhuteshu. Samoham sarvabhuteshu. I am the same to all living entities. Na me dveshosti. I don't hate anyone. Na priyaha. And no one is dear to me. This is talking about just your average person in the material world. I mean, why would he? Why would he be favorable or unfavorable? He's not. He just sees that you get your karma. If you do good karma, you get it. If you do bad karma, you get it. And he's not thinking, oh, I like this one, so I'm giving them something good, and I don't like this one, so I'll give them something bad. He just sees that you get what you deserve as super soul. So, Krishna is not going to just choose that here is Danny. That here is Danny, and I like his blue t-shirt. No one else, well, not many others have blue t-shirts. So. I think that today I will give Danny bhakti, assuming he didn't have it. Of course, he has a lot of bhakti already. Anyway, just people are walking in the street, and Krishna, it is not that Krishna says, you, I'm going to give you bhakti. And all the others, who may be no better than you by material standards, they're just ordinary people, like everyone else. But Krishna just decides, well, I'm not going to bother with you, so you all, you can just, whatever, take your karma and too bad. But you, this particular one, who's just another ordinary person, but you, I'm going to give you bhakti, and in this way you can go back to Godhead and perfect your life. No. Krishna's not like that. Krishna's not like that. Although it is a fact, and the point is made, I think, here. In the second to last paragraph. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is on page 2, second to last paragraph. He makes the point that we see that Krishna is partial to his devotee. He favors his devotees. Like, do you know the pastime of Mohini? The Lord is Mohini? Female? Form?
Yes.
So the Lord came and cheated the demons to benefit the devotees or the demigods. It was outright cheating. It was. So there, he's not being fair. He's being very unfair. So it is a fact that when you are a devotee already, once you have become a devotee, then Krishna will be partial to you. And in fact, in that same verse that I referred to, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, Na me dveshosti, na priyaha. But then he says, Ye vajanti tamam bhaktya. But those who worship me in devotion, how's it going? Yevajanitamamatya. Mai te teshu chapyaham. They are friends to me, they are in me, and I am a friend to them. So Krishna is partial to his devotees, once they are devotees, once a person is a devotee. But when they're not, meaning they're the type of person we're talking about, they haven't come to bhakti yet, then it is not a fact that Krishna singles people out from the crowd and just gives them bhakti for no good reason, and the others who are just as qualified or unqualified, they're no better or worse, but they don't get bhakti. Not like that. So in this way, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, he refutes these ideas, these first four ideas, and then comes to the fifth idea. What about the devotees? Because the devotees, they give Krishna consciousness sometimes. So now we have to consider that there are three levels of devotees. I think you already know, don't you? Kanishta, Madhyam, and Uttama. So you can't just say the devotees as if they're one group, because they're these three subdivisions and they're actually quite different from each other. So what about a Kanishta? It means the lowest grade of devotee, very, very neophyte. Is it possible or likely, how likely is it that a Kanishta might give someone bhakti? Well, it's not very likely. Actually, it's not impossible. Anyway, if a person is truly Kanishta, it's not really possible, actually. If they're truly Kanishta. Because Kanishta means that Krishna consciousness to them means me and Krishna. Thus, that's it. There's me and Krishna. And the other devotees, they're not in the picture. They don't count. And those who are not devotees, they also don't count. It's just me and Krishna. So this is Kanishta. So now such a person is not likely, if someone is not a devotee, such a person is not very likely to go up to them and say, hey, come on, become a devotee. And explain it and go through whatever it takes to get the person to take an interest. Because they don't care. All they care about is me and Krishna. And everyone else doesn't matter. They can do what they like. So now what about an Uttama? Top class devotee. Well, I don't know how familiar you are with the characteristics of these different levels of devotees, but one characteristic of the Uttama, Jiva Goswami explains it in very interesting terms in Bhakti Sandhara, which we referred to briefly this morning. So he says that an Uttama is thinking that Krishna is so nice. Krishna is so nice that everyone must like him. And he's so absorbed in that. You can just try to picture a little bit. He's so absorbed in that, that he cannot imagine that any person does not like Krishna. He cannot imagine. How is it possible that a person could do anything other than love Krishna? It's impossible. So therefore he thinks, there's no need to preach to anyone, because they all like Krishna. They're already devotees. Because how could they be anything else? Because Krishna is just so nice. Can you imagine such a consciousness? Not very clearly, because we're not very close to that level. But I think you can get a little idea. So he thinks, there's no need to preach, because everyone's a pure devotee. They must be. How could they be anything else? It's not possible. He actually cannot see that the possibility of someone not appreciating Krishna exists. Because he's so absolutely absorbed in love of Krishna. This is very amazing consciousness. Then, so that's regarding everyone else. And what about himself? How does he see himself? He sees himself, or herself, as being the most wretched and unqualified and hopeless and useless and even dangerous soul in existence. So Krishna Devaraja Swami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says that, what is it? Anyone who hears my name, he says, I'm lower than the worm in store. Anyone who hears my name becomes simple. So he's actually thinking like that. It's not just a sentimental expression, but he's actually feeling that I'm actually so low. Now, we are not capable of thinking like that because we are still contaminated. And part of the contamination means we still have some pride. So we may sometimes think, oh yes, I'm not very advanced, or I should try harder. And if something very bad happens, we may think, oh gosh, I really made a mess of that, and actually I'm really quite unqualified. So sometimes we may think like that, but to feel that I am the lowest, actually, and if people associate with me, it'll be bad for them. This is not possible for us. But someone like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who's Uttama Adhikari, he's fixed in that concept of himself. So he feels everyone else is a devotee. How could they be anything else? But me, I'm the worst. So what can I say? What can I tell anyone? How can I help anyone? So therefore, generally, he doesn't preach. Generally, he won't preach. The Kanishna basically won't preach because he can't, he has no inclination. And the Uttama, when he's acting as Uttama, then he generally won't. Because he feels, first of all, there's no need because they're all pure devotees. And even if there was a need, I couldn't do it because I'm totally unqualified. So there's no, either way, there's no real question. But then what about the Madhyam? Here, let's see. In the last paragraph, he says, considering the case of the Madhyam devotee, the middle class devotee, he says that the Madhyam does exhibit partiality. And where does he get that idea from? From Srimad Bhagavatam. 11.2, what is it? Actually, it's 11.2. It's not 11.3. It's 11.2, 46. There are a few errors. We'll try and bring them to your attention as we go. But it's 11.2.46. In 11.2.46, one great devotee explains what are the four characteristics of a Madhyam, middle-class devotee. So they're here. Love for the Lord, attached to the Lord, friendly to the devotees, merciful to the innocent, and disregards the envious. No interest. Doesn't want to know about them. Keeps away from them. So this is the Shastric definition, which is explaining the natural characteristics of a middle-class devotee. So one of them is the key. That is the third. Merciful to the innocent. So the middle-class devotee, by nature, will be inclined to help people who are not devotees become devotees. But he's selective. If there's someone who's not a devotee, but that person is envious, then he won't deal with them. But if someone is not a devotee, but they're innocent,